Always expect something good on your lunch hour. Connecting faith with life.
Well, good afternoon and welcome to Connecting Faith. One of the things I just adore about doing a show like this is the opportunity to connect with so many authors and pastors, even scholars, and I get to share all of them with you. Well, today I am just delighted to get to introduce to you a childhood friend of mine who attended the same high school, the same church, and even played the same neighborhood games of Kick the Can. You may know her from her work on Fox News, previously host of Fox and Friends, and now of her own show called The Real Story. I'm talking about Gretchen Carlson, and this week she's releasing her own story called Getting Real, and is here to share about her journey as a pastor's granddaughter, of winning the Miss America pageant, and of how faith and commitment to family factor into her work as a host of a wildly popular program on Fox News. Well, let me introduce you to her, and we will get started with the show. Gretchen Carlson is an award-winning journalist and host of Fox News Channel's The Real Story with Gretchen Carlson. She previously co-hosted Fox and Friends and served as a correspondent and co-anchor on the CBS Saturday Early Show. She is an accomplished classical violinist and was crowned Miss America in 1989. Her new book, Getting Real, is available this week. Welcome, Gretchen.
Hey, Joe. Great to talk to you.
Well, it's wonderful to have you on the show and to get to read about all your experiences. Your book highlights so many of experiences that you've had. Some are exciting, some are challenging, some are heartbreaking. What are you hoping that people will take away from finally being able to read about your story?
Well, first and foremost, that I'm the same person that I always was growing up in Anoka, Minnesota, and that if somebody met me when I was a kid there or now when I'm in my 40-somethings, that I would still be the same person. And to that, I credit the wonderful upbringing that I had with amazing parents and an amazing community. And, you know, as if I fast forward to my life now, I want people to know that people who are on national TV also have issues and problems, and that, you know, we also have to deal with really, you know, important life events. And I want people to know that about me. I want them to know the real side of the struggles that I've had and how my faith has played an incredible role in me being able to overcome some of those struggles, and also how those failures sometimes lead you in the direction of success, which is a huge lesson that we should be teaching our young people. So when I wrap it up all together, I want it to be empowering for young women and young men, and women and men of all ages, that if a little fat girl from Anoka, Minnesota can, you know, end up becoming Miss America by using her classical violin talent and have 25 years in the TV industry and end up with her own show on national TV, hey, if I can do it, you can do it too.
Well, you know, something that seems to have really kept you grounded through all of your experiences is your faith. So let's back up a little bit. Tell me more about what your faith story is and how it kind of interweaves with your life now and what you've done and what you've accomplished.
Well, I don't know if your listeners know this, but Joe and I grew up as next door neighbors in Anoka, Minnesota. And so I've known Joe for our entire lives. And, you know, we all went to the same church. And you know, of course, that my grandfather was the minister at Zion Lutheran Church.
Love your grandfather. Love
him. Yeah, for 34 years. And so I really didn't know anything different than spending a whole lot of time in the church. And I remember being a kid and watching my grandfather in the pulpit and thinking he was a rock star. You know, it was just, it made going to church that much more fun. And I have so many memories of playing my violin in church a million times, even playing the piano. And when I would go up for communion, I would sit down or kneel down, and he always would come past. And when he would do the communion with me, he would rub my face, the side of my face. And I always got tears in my eyes when he did that. It was almost like his special little way of showing me that you're my girl. And so I just had this wonderful relationship with him, and I respected him so much, Joe, because he grew up on a dirt floor in southern Minnesota and had nothing. And of all of his siblings, he was the only one to go past the seventh grade. And one day he was helping the janitor in the church for a job, and the high school football coach from Red Wing, the big city, saw him, and he was a big, strapping young boy. He said, "Have you ever played football?" And my grandfather didn't even know what it was. And he said, "Well, you're playing football." And so he lived with that coach during his high school years. It gave him the opportunity to actually go to high school. And through that, he got a football scholarship to go to Gustavus Adolphus. And after that, he decided to dedicate his life to Christ because he met that man while he was in the church. Mm-hmm. And so here's somebody who has picked himself up from nothing and made himself into this amazing man. And then he takes our church from 800 members when he started to 8,000, making it the second largest Lutheran church in America at that time. And so I learned from him not only religion as a foundation in my life, but I learn, oh my goodness, when you work hard at something, you become successful. And that perseverance is something that I've carried through with me my entire life.
Well, and having a grandfather as the senior pastor of your church, it influenced your life, but your grandmother also was a huge influence in your life. And I can say, as someone who went to that church, in all of our lives as well, what was it like to just have that strong foundation? And do you find that that is something that seems to be lacking today?
Yeah, you know, one of the wonderful things also about growing up in the community that we did was that all my relatives lived within 1 mile. So, and back then, you know, we would ride our bikes all over the place. So I saw my grandparents all the time. And of course, the church was right across the street from the junior high. So when I wanted to ride home and didn't want to walk the mile home, I'd just, you know, walk across the street and say, "Hi, Grandpa." And I'd go into his drawer and get Juicy Fruit gum. I remember that. And my grandmother was sort of the sounding board for me growing up. She was much more meek and mild. She was really nothing like me in personality, but she had played the violin. And so when I started playing the violin at age 6, I felt like that was this special connection that I had with her. So she was a great listener, and also we had this musical sort of gift in common. So, you know, unfortunately, she died too soon, Joe. She died when I was 16 years old, and I have to tell you, when I was standing on the Miss America stage before I went out to play my violin performance, she is the first person I thought of. Mm. And I said the Lord's Prayer, and then I thought of my grandma Heilengren, and how proud she would have been to see me walk out there and play her instrument. And so she really was with me that night. But I just, and I know she's seen what's happened in life because she's in heaven. But I just wish she had been on earth to be able to experience that with me as well, and to experience my children too.
Mm. Oh, I know that is just, it's so sad when we think about those people who have been huge influencers in our lives and how much we want our children to meet them and know them, and to not be able to give them that gift is, it's heartbreaking sometimes.
Mm-hmm. My children luckily knew, well, at least my first daughter, my daughter knew my grandpa. He died when he was 93. And he worked almost up until the last day, until he physically couldn't. And he baptized, well, he married me. He baptized her, and he died 3 weeks before my son was born. Mm. So he just missed out on baptizing both of my children.
So your local church was kind of a hub. It was certainly a hub for our community. I remember that very well. It was also a really great platform for you to get started performing, right? I mean, I remember Someone from your family was performing practically every week.
Yes, well, you know, my dad was a great singer.
Mm-hmm.
And so both my mom and dad sang in the church choir, but my dad often did solos too. And I mentioned that I also played piano. So if I wasn't doing the violin, a duet with my sister who played cello, or a violin solo, I was also playing the piano. And oh, by the way, I taught Sunday school too, which was a good precursor to the life that I have now, because I feel like I'm reliving my life in my church, in my community now in Connecticut, through my children's eyes, because I'm now teaching their Sunday school classes, and they're now singing in the church choir, and they're now performing piano at our church. So this is a wonderful tradition, you know, not only the musical one, but the faith one that I am trying to keep going with my own children.
So family and values, they tend to be kind of buzzwords that we sometimes hear from politicians and maybe even in the media. But you say that your upbringing was truly formed by your idea of what it meant to be part of a community and those strong values. Talk more about that and how you think that was accomplished, and how we can still accomplish that today, even if maybe we don't live in a small Midwestern town.
Yeah, you know, I guess I didn't realize it at the time growing up how lucky I was to be in that environment where we had close-knit communities and church was sort of the center of everything. I mean, it was the center of where you went on Sunday, but it was also where you went to do volunteer work, you know, and it was where you went to learn about giving to others who were less fortunate. And so it really was sort of the center part of my life. And from that came the way in which my parents decided to raise us, which was faith is a foundation. And my dad used to always say to me, "Gretchen, people will know what kind of a person you are and whether or not you're a Christian by the way you act, and not necessarily by what you say." And that was so important at the time. But I don't think I realized how fortunate I was till I started moving all around the country and seeing how times were changing as well and realizing, wow, I had it pretty good to grow up with those traditional values and my family being so close and having parents who so believed in me and instilled this amazing self-esteem. And not everyone had that. You know, I think I took it for granted maybe as a young kid. And when I got out into the real world, I met people who didn't have a mom who told them every night when she said prayers with me, and you know, Gretchen, you can be anything you want to be. And I heard that consistently. And when I got out into the real world, first and foremost, I was amazed to find out that people hadn't heard that all along. I was also amazed to find out that everything wasn't equal. you know, it was just some startling things. And then also that people just didn't have this amazing upbringing of community. And I still think that exists in the Midwest, and it's why I am just really – it's so important to me to bring my kids home to see Minnesota and to see the values and the traditions. And I bring them up north, and we have a more simpler experience, and we play bingo, and we make s'mores, and we water ski, you know, more of these simple things than what they're having in their daily lives living on the East Coast, which can be a little bit more fast-paced. But – it's my husband and my goal to make sure that we, to the best of our ability, can give our two children a similar experience to what both of us had growing up in the Midwest.
Mm. Well, today we're talking with Gretchen Carlson. She's host of The Real Story with Gretchen Carlson, which airs each afternoon on Fox News. Gretchen has penned a new book, Getting Real, sharing her inspiring story about what it means to strive for and to find success in the real world and maintain a strong and vibrant faith throughout. We'll talk about music and that Miss America crown when we come back on Connecting Faith. Well, welcome back to Connecting Faith. I'm Joe Bender, and today I have the honor of talking with veteran news anchor Gretchen Carlson and to hear her inspiring story of kind of rising to the top of her field, not only as a news anchor, but it also started much earlier than that, excelling as a concert violinist. Gretchen, tell us how you first discovered the violin, and when did you learn that you might actually have a very special gift in playing it?
Well, it was almost by a fluke. Actually, I really wanted to play the piano when I was a little girl, and I guess I would hear commercials on TV, and then I would go down to the piano in our home and kind of plunk out the tune, and I kept asking my mom, can't I take piano? And then, you know, we decided that to visit a teacher, and they said, oh, your hands are not that big. Maybe you shouldn't do piano. Maybe you should try another instrument. So just kind of in a fluke experience, we went up to the local school, and I remember seeing all the stringed instruments hanging on the wall. And I looked at the violin, and I pointed to it, and I said, I'll try that one. And so there was really no planning for it. It just sort of happened, and it just clicked. And there was this wonderful man in our hometown of Anoka, Minnesota, named Ken Davenport, who was legendary. He had played in the Minnesota Orchestra as a bass player, and he was, you know, running all the music programs in our entire school district. And he started teaching me, even though he didn't really play violin per se. And after about 3 months, he was like, look, this kid I think has something. I got to move her on to somebody else. And so I went to teach with his to take lessons from his daughter. And after about a year of doing that, when I was 7, she was like, look, I don't know what to do with her. We got to find somebody else. So that's when I auditioned for Mary West, who was known as, you know, the premier teacher throughout the entire Midwest for young people on the violin. And I can still remember going to that audition. I might have been 7 or 8 years old at the time. And it was at the University of Minnesota, and it was up on the second floor in Dinky Town. And it was in the summer, and it was so hot. And there were so many people in there listening to this audition. And I played Flight of the Bumblebee, which, as you might recall, is a really fast, you know, technically difficult piece. And she agreed to take me on. And that was really a life-changing event because I went from kind of just playing, you know, a little bit as a 6 and 7 year old to really practicing 3 or 4 hours a day and becoming better and better. And so, you know, it really was, as you know, from being my next door neighbor, it was a huge part of my life. And I entered many competitions and really thought that was going to be my career in life.
Well, what I loved about you the most, though, is that you'd also come out and play baseball with the rest of us.
Well, that's because you know, I was a tomboy and I was a chubby kid. And
we
I
had no choice.
Sports.
We had all those boys.
Well, yes, of course. And but I loved it. I so much more wanted to be outside playing army in the woods and building, you know, forts and that kind of stuff. My sister was just so much more ladylike, and that just really wasn't for me. And, you know, eventually my mom made me give up a lot of the sports because I broke my pinky finger on my violin hand playing football. And that was detrimental to my violin career. And so I always say I never learned how to cook because she never let me touch knives, which was true. And I had to quit sports in seventh grade for the most part, other than tennis, because she was so nervous that I was going to do something to my fingers. And, you know, so as athletic as I was and loved to be out playing with the boys, I kind of had to give that part of it up.
Well, you know, I remember reading an article about Michael Jordan in an interview with a reporter where somebody asked him what it was like to have this gift of playing basketball and how made some kind of comment of how it must be so great to be so gifted and not have to work at it. And he made some kind of, Jordan said something like, hey, buddy, there are gifted 15-year-olds playing on concrete courts all over the city. Part of having the gift is recognizing it and then doing everything you can to develop it. Having the gift is only the start. And when I read your story, and of course, knowing how you were practicing all the time and gone a lot, just honing your craft, what do you say to those who say, well, it was just a gift that you were given? I feel like you know so much more about just perseverance and sticking to it and developing that gift that God gave you.
Well, first and foremost, I believe that every person and every child is given a gift by God, and it just takes recognizing what it is and cultivating it. Mm. So for me, it starts with faith. You know, I believe that I was given this gift from God, and it was then my responsibility to figure out how to make it into something. And so through that, you know, I think a lot of gifts go unrecognized in people. They don't even realize they have something. So part of that's parenting. You know, I had amazing parents who, wow, if I would add up all the hours that my mom spent with me practicing and taking me to lessons and taking me to competitions, it was, you know, on the one hand, she now runs a company, but on the other hand, I was so grateful that she was staying at home at that time and could afford all those hours to help me. So parenting is huge. And then it's just, you know, the singular discipline of the individual to put in all those hours. You know, it's so interesting because I tell this to my kids now when they don't want to practice the piano. When you put time into something, even if it's 10 or 15 minutes a day, you get better at it. Mm-hmm. And kids love that. They love to, it's fascinating to them to figure out, oh my gosh, yeah, I only practiced piano 15 minutes yesterday, but I actually can play that passage better now. Mm-hmm. And then by the end of the week before their next lesson, when they've put in a couple more days of 15 to 30 minutes, they actually know the entire piece.
I feel like we've had parallel conversations with our children sitting on the piano bench.
I know, and then every so often I get the, I want to quit, Mommy.
Oh, goodness.
And I'm like, okay, but don't you actually like being able to play? Well, I guess so, Mommy. Okay, well, then that means you actually have to practice. But, you know, I have to be honest with you, Joe. I have a lot of internal discussions with myself and a lot of prayer sessions with God about how much to push my kids because, you know, I grew up in a different way than they are growing up with regard to their music. And even my parents will say to me now when they hear my daughter play, who is very gifted on the piano, they will say, Gretchen, you know, you really should practice more with her. And I say, yes, I probably should, but I don't because I don't want to in any way force her to do something that she doesn't want to, even though I, of course, encourage her to practice 35 to 45 minutes a day, but I'm not encouraging her practice 2 to 3 hours. Mm. It's just, you know, it's just a different way of parenting for me now, maybe based on how I was brought up, and not that it was something that I didn't enjoy at the time, but I don't know if piano is going to be her career. And, you know, violin didn't end up being my career, so I want her to have so many other life choices while at the same time being a really good piano player.
So at many points, at least a couple, you did have to decide that maybe music was not going to be your profession. You were certainly suited for it and could have made a wonderful career of it. I loved how you wrote about other people who were at your particular level, say at a high school age, who went on to be professional musicians, and that could be you. But what was in your mind as you made those calls to maybe do something different, to not be a professional musician, but do something else? And how did your faith factor into those decisions as well?
I decided when I was about 17 years old that I was losing steam on my interest in the violin. And it was very complicated. It was, number one, that I enjoyed so many other things in life. And I realized from seeing other professional musicians that if I really wanted to make this as a career and become a famous concert artist, I would have to give up everything else that I enjoyed. Mm-hmm. And I really enjoyed academics, too. So that included going to a good college. You know, that included being in the school plays. I had already given up sports, but it just really would have meant tunnel vision in my life. And I could not see that for myself. And so I made this really critical decision and told my parents that I didn't want to do it as a career anymore. And of course, it was a very difficult time in our family because my parents knew how much time I had invested in it and how much time they had invested in it. And I just decided that I wasn't going to do it anymore. So I went off to Stanford to really focus on my studies. And then my mom got a brochure in the mail about the Miss America pageant. And I'll never forget because she called me when I was studying at Oxford in England, and she said, Gretchen, I found something for you to do that will make use of your violin talent that you've honed your entire life. And I said, what? She said, the Miss America pageant. And I said, what are you talking about? And she said, look, it's 50% of your points is talent and 30% is interview, and you're smart. So, you know, this is something you should really consider. Well, let's just say I didn't say yes after the first phone call, but she eventually, you know, she eventually encouraged me to do this. And I came home from Oxford and entered my first pageant. And so that's really how I got into that, too. Similar to the violin, it was kind of a fluke thing, not something that I had thought about at all in my life. And she was right. It was a really great way for me to make use of a talent that had gone by the wayside. And, you know, in the end, it all worked out. Now, as far as how faith factors into that in a myriad of ways, because faith is my foundation in life, going through a huge competition like that was something that was forefront in my mind every single day, whether it was trying to get in shape to be respectable in the swimsuit competition. As you know, I'm 5'3", so I'm short. You know, so that was something I really, really had to work at. Whether it was, you know, faith as a foundation and going back to practicing all those hours on the violin again, preparing for the interview and studying every single world issue. You know, just spending so much time again with my mother, you know, that can be trying too. But it's a lot of singular solo time in preparing for something like that. And so oftentimes, the only friend I had on a daily basis was God. And I have distinct memories of many of those painstaking days where I didn't think that I could do it anymore, and talking to God a lot. And so if it wasn't my mother who was behind me, always supporting me, it was certainly God on a daily basis.
Well, I'm talking with Gretchen Carlson today about her new book, Getting Real, and we're chatting about the Miss America pageant. We'll hear more about that as we come back on Connecting Faith. Welcome back to Connecting Faith. I'm Joe Bender. Thanks so much for joining us today. Very honored today to get to speak with Gretchen Carlson. She is an anchor on Fox News and has also been Miss America in 1989. We've been chatting a little bit about that and how you got started, Gretchen. A lot of people seem to think that people kind of, as a toddler, say, you know, I'm going to be Miss America, and they work toward it their whole lives. But it was very different for you and seemed a little more like, hey, this is a new opportunity. I'm going to use the skills that I have to do this. And you put together a plan. What are some kind of misperceptions that you seem to hear along the way when people hear that you were Miss America?
How long do you have, Joe? Listen, you know, when I was preparing to become Miss America, and you're right in the way and you described it, it was not a lifelong goal. It was something that I looked at and did use my talents to put them into place, and it just all happened to work out. But I never realized there were all these stereotypes about it, you know, and then once I became Miss America, it was like my Stanford education and my Oxford education and my concert violin career as a kid went off my resume.
Uh-huh.
It was unbelievable. Being blonde didn't help. So, you know, I now say, to fast forward in my book, Getting Real, that I reached the bimbo trifecta when I came to Fox News, because I already was blonde, one. I was a former Miss America, two. And then I came to work at Fox, three.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, I guess that I grew very accustomed to dealing with the stereotype very quickly because it all happened so quickly. And all of a sudden, it was like, wait a minute, you don't think that women compete in this organization? You don't think they're smart? I mean, the average GPA of these state title holders is 3.7. You know, show me anyone else, any other group of women who can accomplish that other than Mensa. So it was something that was difficult to deal with at the beginning, but something that has sort of become my life fight, because I will forever now be a former Miss America, and I'm also on the board now, and it's my life mission to make sure that those stereotypes are dispelled. You know, who would you rather have your kids to look up to? Reality TV stars that we watch now and honor for being famous for no apparent reason, who have interesting lifestyles? Or do you want to have your kids look up to a Miss America contestant who is getting her second doctorate and also going to go on Capitol Hill to lobby for her platform, an issue that's near and dear to her heart, and, you know, oh, by the way, has an amazing talent? To me, it seems pretty obvious who you want your kids to emulate. And so that has become my mission, to try and dispel some of these stereotypes. But let me tell you, I've lived through 25 years of them, and they're hard. They're hard to get rid of.
Well, one of the things that you write about in your book, especially as it applied to the Miss America pageant, was this feeling you had about your own body and body image, and how that was a struggle to you, and how you talk about that now when you talk to young people or even women our age, that's a real struggle, and that even though you're on TV and you look perfect all the time, and, you know, someone's there to do your hair and makeup, you still feel like that's a struggle that we all go through. How do you talk about that, and how do you kind of work with that within yourself?
Right. Well, it's so important, I think, to be honest about this, first and foremost. But as I've said during this show, and you knew because you were my next-door neighbor, I was a chubby kid. And I think, in a way, it was a blessing. I mean, my mom really wanted me to go on a diet, like, every day. But first of all, she was a great cook, so she didn't help.
Had cookies too.
Oh,
there
no,
were always cookies at your house.
Oh, I know. And then she would go away, and she'd come home, and they'd all be gone, and she'd say, "Who ate all the cookies?" And I would look at my best friend Molly, and I would point to her, and I go, "Molly did." And the only problem was I kept getting fatter, and Molly kept getting skinnier. So, you know, the cat was out of the bag. But anyway, I think it's actually a blessing in retrospect that I was fat, because I learned how to build my self-esteem from the inside out, and I like to say from my soul. And that is such a great lesson for young people now today, because even more so now in 2015, everything, social media and television in general, is all about people trying to look perfect, and it's not something that hardly anyone can attain. You know, with photoshopping and all of these ways in which we can make people look better than they already really are. And so my lesson to young people is, here's what I did. You know, I was a chubby, fat kid, and I learned how to believe in myself through other things, not my outward appearance. So whether it was the violin or doing well in school or whatever it was, that's what made me feel good about me. And I think that's such an important lesson, to build your self-esteem from the inside out. You know, a lot of moms would come up to me and they'd say, well, how can I possibly, you know, get my daughter to win the Miss America pageant or even win Miss Minnesota? And I would say, not do pageants, you know, have her build her self-esteem from the inside out by practicing the piano or doing a sport really well and putting a lot of time into it, or academics, or anything where you build this self-confidence from building up who you are as a person from the inside. So that, to me, is a life lesson that I lived, but also one that I'm trying to pass along. And with regard to perfectionism now, I also say in the book, perfectionism is a demon. You know, look, I'm a perfectionist. I have a type A personality, but I am trying to make sure every single day that I can take that away from my daughter. You know, she has the same traits. She's also a perfectionist, but I tell her every day, mommy makes so many mistakes and daddy does too. And it's absolutely fine. We don't want you to be perfect. You know, it puts so much pressure on a person to think that they have to live up to all these ideals. So I just want people to know, when they watch me on TV, I'm not perfect. I'm far from it. I still struggle with my weight every single day. You know, I have to think about what I eat every day, and I have to exercise to stay relatively in good shape. But, you know, eating is my favorite thing still. So it's difficult. And I'm not perfect, and I don't want to be perfect. And I don't think, I think it's a demon to put that and a curse to put that on anybody.
Do you ever feel like people watch you and seem to think that you've never had a struggle? And what do you do to dispel that?
Well, for the first time, I'm talking about a lot of those struggles in my book. First and foremost, you know, about 15, 17 years ago, I got fired in this business. And it was really, really my deepest, probably deepest time in my life. I had just gotten married, and it was a week after I got back from my honeymoon. And the male boss said to me, well, you'll be okay now because you have a husband, which is not something anybody should ever say to you. I mean, I was in my 30s. You know, I had built my career, and this was my identity. And it wasn't just like I was going to be able to go next door and get another job. I knew that I was going to probably have to move cities, and here I had a new husband. And so it was a year, the first year of my marriage. I was unemployed, and I'll tell you something. I have a soft spot in my heart for anyone who's ever been fired or who's going through a difficult time right now, because I really had to dig deep about who I was and what my faith meant to me. Because there were a lot of days where it was difficult to get up and say, wow, you know, what am I going to do with myself today? And eventually I did get another job, but I had to move to Dallas, and my husband stayed in Cleveland. And so then our second year of marriage, we commuted with each other. And that wasn't always the easiest thing. So, you know, we had a rocky start. We had a rocky start to our marriage, a rocky start for me, or in the middle of my career. And, you know, you learn great life lessons from going through something like that.
Well, and then you fast forward, and you were able to achieve what you said was one of your lifelong goals, was to host a morning show on national television, and then you're there. So did you take some time to think about just what a great accomplishment that was? And do you ever find yourself like whizzing through life and not taking time to realize what indeed you've already done?
No. And, you know, ironically, my mom happened to be in town on the day that I found out that I was going to be doing Fox and Friends, a Monday through Friday. It just
sweet.
You know, yeah, it was so sweet. And it was just happenstance. But I think maybe somebody up above might have had something to do with that, because, you know, she's really been my partner my entire life in accomplishments and love. And the idea that she happened to be here that day and I could call her up and say, Mom, you're never going to believe this. And then I could see her 2 minutes later and we could share in that. So, yes, it was my lifelong goal to do a morning show. And one of the funny reasons why is because for all those years when I was toiling away in local markets and covering, you know, all kinds of breaking news and fires and murders and sad news, and I would send my mom tapes because, of course, this was before the Internet and everything else. And she would get the tapes and then she'd call me up. She'd say, Gretchen, I think you're doing just a very good job, but I would just so much appreciate if you would smile more, because I want people to know who the real you is. And I'd say, Mom, I'm covering fires and murders. I can't be smiling when I'm doing that. She's like, well, if there's just any other way you could showcase your personality. Mm. So I said to her, you know that my life goal, you know, is to be able to get to a morning show where I can do all kinds of different news. So when I finally got there, you know, she was just so ecstatic because she was like, oh, people are going to be able to see your sense of humor now and see you laugh and see the lighthearted side of Gretchen as well. And you know, that was really true. For 8 years, I did Fox and Friends. And before that, I did the Saturday early show at CBS. And it's true. You know, you do so many different kinds of news stories. And people, I think, did have a chance to get to know the real Gretchen. And now I do the real story on Fox, and my book is getting real. So you can see that I want to remain true to who I was growing up in Minnesota.
Well, and it is fun to see when you do a story that's not hard news, at least when you get to highlight a little bit of who you are and where you came from. It is fun. It is fun to see that part of you as someone who knows you, but I know you don't get a chance to do that as often as probably you'd like to. So it is wonderful to read about your stories in the book and be able to see that.
Thank you.
Are there things that have kind of surprised you, good or bad, that have come with your TV career or of being famous? Are there things that happened or have happened to you that you didn't really know about or would prefer not to?
Well, for the first time in the book, I talk about having a life-threatening stalker for 4 years, which is a really important story for other women, because so many women suffer through this silently, and what I experienced as well is that many times nobody cares about it until you're dead. So that is a story that I'm telling for the first time, number one, because the man who was stalking me is no longer on this earth, so I felt safe in telling the story, but also because I want to be of help to all these other women who have gone through a similar situation, and I'm going to add in domestic violence to that as well. I did a 30-part series when I worked for NBC in Dallas on domestic violence, so it's something that I came to know a lot about and learned a lot about, and so that's something important in my book. From the other side of things I didn't know I would encounter is, especially now with social media, and this is also something that I talk about in the book to help young people, you know, people are vicious and cruel, and especially with people in the public eye. I think they just feel like they can. There's that sense of anonymity as well with social media. And if I read for you some of the emails and comments that I get on Facebook or Twitter on a daily basis, if I actually read some of those for you, you might pass out. I mean, people are just incredibly cruel. And most of it actually has to do, unfortunately, with how I look, what I'm wearing, you know, what color my hair is. I always say when they do a blonde one, it's like, can't you come up with something better? I mean, I've heard that my whole life. And then, you know, and then it goes into whether or not you're smart or not. And so I can take it. You know, after turning 40s, I'm sure you experience life becomes much more liberating. I mean, you decide you really don't, you know, care that much about things that used to bum you out. And I really became that way after 42. If I read all these things every day, I would go stark raving mad, but I don't. But at the same time, I have very thick skin. And the reason I share these stories in my book is because I'm worried about our young people. I'm worried about social media and how it affects our young people and their self-esteem, which we were just talking about. And, you know, there are kids who commit suicide after they read things like this. And so I want to tell these stories to bring them to the forefront that I also go through this, and I care about what's going to happen to our young people, and I care about the pressure that they're under to try and be cool and fit in, and I want them to know that no matter how hard they try, they probably won't always fit in, but it's okay. And faith is a huge component of that. You know, if you know that you have faith as your foundation in your life, then you're not alone when you're dealing with those issues either. So in the book, you know, I just kind of come full circle, and faith is such a main theme, but it really factors in to every struggle that I've had and every accomplishment that I've had.
I remember sitting at my desk with my head in my hands, just bawling, because I was reading emails when I was on TV, and that came in, and it was exactly what you said. My hair is bad. I'm stupid. I look fat and red. I mean, are you pregnant? You know, all of these different things. And I remember just crying, and my mentor, my supervisor, came up to me and he said, I'm going to teach you something today. It's the power of delete.
Yes, but let me share something with you, Joan. This is the other way in which I deal with it, and I find that it has fascinating results. And this harkens back to the way I was brought up. You know, my mom used to say, if you can't say something nice, don't say nothing at all. Well, here's the thing. Sometimes I write back to these people, and I kill them with kindness. And I say, well, thank you so much for your comments and your thoughts today. I hope you have a fantastic day, exclamation point. And I have to tell you that about half the time, they will write back and say, well, I didn't really mean it that way the first time or whatever. So, you know, if I've changed a couple of minds by doing a little act of kindness, you know, I guess that's what we learned in the Bible, right?
Yep.
And so I have decided to try that tact from time to time if I actually look at the email. And I find that that has worked as well.
Well, that is great advice. Talking to Gretchen Carlson today about her book, Getting Real, about some of her experiences, not only growing up, but becoming a news anchor, a national news correspondent, and of course, Miss America. We're going to talk more with her as we come back. And if you've been listening and you would like to get your hands on a copy of her book, well, she and her publisher have been very generous and provided a nice stack of books for us. This is not a live show. I'm taping it ahead of time. So what I need you to do is go to our website at myfaithradio.com. Click on Connecting Faith on our show page, and you'll be able to submit your name and email address there. We'll enter you in on a drawing and make sure you get a copy of that book. You can also submit a question, of course, if you would like, and I will try to get that to Gretchen as well. We'll be right back on Connecting Faith. Welcome back to Connecting Faith. Thanks so much for joining us this afternoon, having a great conversation with my next door neighbor from a long time ago, Gretchen Carlson. Getting real.
Feels like yesterday.
It seems like just so long ago that, yes, we grew up on that little corner in Anoka, Minnesota. Just so privileged to have known you then and to have known you now, Gretchen.
Thank you.
We've just been talking about her new book, Getting Real, where she shares a lot of her experiences growing up as well as in the news business now. And if you'd like to get a copy of that book, you can go to our website at myfaithradio.com, click on Connecting Faith. You can enter your name and email, and we'll do a drawing at the end of the show. So, Gretchen, you're a wife, you're a mom, you're a TV personality. What have you learned about that balance and creating margin in your life? Because I'm guessing most people have ideas of what it's like to be you, but do you ever kind of talk about the sacrifices that you've made to have this career, and how do you work it all in? It seems exhausting even just to think about it.
Well, first of all, thankfully, again, to my mom, she made me really organized. And I think it comes from living my life always to have to fit so much in when I was practicing the violin all those hours and studying for school that I've learned how to be a really good manager of time. And my major in college, ironically, was organizational behavior. So, I would have been a problem solver in a company had I used that major. And I do actually use those organizational skills on a daily basis, not only at my job in TV, but managing my whole family. I think every woman can attest to this, whether or not you work in the home or outside of the home, that you're kind of the family manager. And it's the same for me. So, yes, we've been blessed with two children, 10 and 12 years old, and my husband also has a demanding career. And he's just really respectful of my career, which helps. And I don't know, Joe, I know I get a lot done during the day, and I know I have a lot going on, but I don't feel like I'm overwhelmed, and I think that's a good thing. I do feel, though, that it is, again, a curse for women to sort of have this mantra that we're supposed to have it all, because I think the only thing that women feel about that sometimes is, well, I'm not really feeling like I'm doing that, so am I a failure? Mm. And so I worry about, like, that whole thing about women having it all and feeling the pressure like we have to live up to that. So I like to say that I don't think it's possible for women to have it all at all times. Mm-hmm. Now, that doesn't mean that I'm not motivated and I don't want to succeed at whatever I put my mind to or anything like that. What that means is that when I'm at work, I'm giving 110% of my time pretty much to work and not to my kids. But when I go home, I'm giving 110% of my time to my kids and not to work. So for me, it's about what you're doing at what particular time in the day. It's not about having it all at every moment of every day, because you're not. That's a fallacy. Mm. It's about how you can create a life of comfort for yourself and for your family and put in time and effort in different hours of the day. So that is the way in which I describe women having it all, but not all at the same time.
Well, and if there's one thing that I've learned from you or your mom, it is how would you know unless you try?
Well,
how would you possibly know if you can have it all? I mean, give it a try. For goodness sake, don't be afraid.
Well, that is so, so, so true. And never, ever, give up, which was also a family motto. And, again, I'm just so blessed that she said those kinds of things to me. It certainly wasn't nagging. It's the truth, and it's what I'm telling my kids now. And I say this in the book. When I put my kids to bed at night and we say our prayers, I don't say to them, wow, I hope you get lucky in life. I say, hey, you've been given gifts, and let's do our best together to make the most of them. Mm-hmm. And I'm a disciplinarian with them too, and they still say, I love you, Mommy, at the end of the day. I'm a big believer, and I talk about parenting in the book too. I'm a big believer in structure for our kids, especially in today's environment where there seems to be so many outside distractions. Mm-hmm. I think kids like to know that they have security at home, and they actually feel the love of the parents more when you take the time to care about them and you take the time to discipline them. Mm-hmm. I actually get a chuckle when my 10-year-old son will say to me, he'll call me up at work when he gets home from school, and he'll say, Mommy, we get to study tonight together, right? Mm-hmm. And I'll be like, thinking to myself, oh, gosh, another science test. But, you know, but I say to him, yes, of course, mommy can hardly wait to get home to study with you. And he is like, it's on his calendar. He is so psyched. And yet I'm teaching him complete discipline, right? Because I'm not going to let him go down and play a video game. We're going to spend 2 hours together, and we're going to make sure that he does as well as he can on his science test. So, you know, I think kids, they thrive for that structure and that discipline, and it's so important to tell them that they can be anything that they want to be.
Well, it's fun to listen to you talk about your kids or parenting on your show as well, and it seems like you have a lot of freedom to kind of bring up issues that are important to you. What are some things that you've been able to bring to the forefront that kind of help people understand who you are?
Well, first and foremost, I'm one of the few national news people who talks about my faith on the air. And it really started when I came to Fox, to be honest with you. We were talking one day on Fox and Friends during the Christmas season about how somebody had petitioned the governor of Washington State to put up a Festivus pole next to the creche. And if anyone watched Seinfeld, you know that Festivus is a made-up holiday. I mean, I get all the humor. I have a great sense of humor. I understand jokes and all this. But I actually felt offended as a Christian with this type of a thing, that we would put up a pole next to the nativity scene just because we're so politically correct now in society. And so I was kind of outraged, very outraged about it on the show. And it just really gained traction. And, of course, I got a ton of criticism. And one particular writer wrote a column about it, and he put the headline, Gretchen Carlson is right. We should be offended by these types of things. So anyway, it just was sort of the start of me talking openly about my faith. And I have to tell you, when people come up to me occasionally on the street in New York City or wherever else, the number one thing they will say to me is, thank you so much for standing up for your values, and thank you so much for talking about your faith. So I know that I'm hitting a chord there with that, and so I continue to do that on my show now. One memory I have is that, you know, the State of the Union happens every January where the president gives a speech, and this past year I did the spiritual state of the union as a segment on my show. You know, really talking about if we actually thought more about our spiritual state in this nation, maybe we'd be doing a better job from top to bottom. So I do have that liberty to choose what I want to focus on in my show. And, of course, we have to do the breaking news of the day and a lot of politics, and we do a lot of international news. But I like to also focus on, you know, religion anytime that I can. And I like to focus on family issues because I feel like it's, you know, family structure is central to a strong society as well.
Well, Gretchen, it's just been such a pleasure to have you on. So grateful that you've taken the time to do this and that you've written your story in this book. If people don't be lucky enough to get a free copy, where can they find out more about you, about your book, and where to get it?
Yeah, so you simply just go to GretchenCarlson.com. And you can find out about my life and see old pictures even. And you can learn how to order the book or at any local bookstore as well. And if anyone in Minnesota wants to come out and see me, I'll be at Mall of America on Monday night, the 22nd, 6 p.m. I will be in the rotunda at Mall of America. I'd love to meet you and sign a book for you.
Okay. Well, wonderful. Thank you so much for coming on, and just blessings on this book and on your life, and just so grateful to be a part of it.
Thank you so much, Joe. It's so great to catch up with you.
You too. Have a great day.
You too.
You've been listening to Connecting Faith. I'm Joe Bender, and it's just been a great, great hour to be able to chat with you and chat with Gretchen Carlson. If you'd like more information on her, we can connect you to her website as well on our website at myfaithradio.com. Have a blessed day.